Afel v'yom atzmaut. There are certain topics that often draw more heat than there are certain topics where even otherwise rational people sometimes have a hard time just seeing things clearly. Sometimes when something becomes a hot button issue, it's very hard to just address things the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu always wants us to address things. You see, Hashem reminds us again and again in the opening pages to figure out Mo Hashem Elokecha Doresh Meitano, what does Ribono Shel Olam want of me? Machal Vasi Varlami. And we believe that Emunah Shleima, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and runs the world, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechasto V'tuvo, as the Rambam expands on prosaically in the Ikari Emunah, as the Ramban expands on poetically in the Hashmatzas to the Sefer HaMitzvahs, when he talks about Birkas HaTorah, where the great gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in Olam Hazeh is the fact that unlike Avraham Avinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't parachute us into this world and expected us to figure out from scratch what's the right thing to do, how to live one's life, and then live it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the gift of Torah. That's, as Ramban highlights, the core of Birkas HaTorah. So Ramban is the mitzvah d'oraisa. The core of Birkas HaTorah is that we are overwhelmingly grateful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He gave us guidance. He gave us the gift of Torah, and He gave us a way to figure out how we're meant to live our lives in Olam Hazeh, in a way that we set ourselves up to be zocheh to merit Olam Haba. That forms the background for the central set of Ikari Emunah. We believe that Kadosh Baruch Hu communicates with people. We believe the reality of Nevuah, supremacy in Nevuah's Moshe, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu through Moshe Rabbeinu gave us a Torah that lotei mukhlefes, lotei Torah cheres, and eis habor yisbarach shemo, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Torah that He meant for all generations. We reject Christianity, we reject Islam, we reject the basic Ikari Emunah, we reject the notion that Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah was temporary and He plans to come again and revise the Torah. We believe that Emunah Shleima, as the Kadosh Baruch Hu built into the Chumash which ironically, as the Rambam and so many others point out, the Chumash which ironically the Christians and Muslims accept. Also, built into the Chumash is as though it's into the Pesukim, is that this Torah is meant for all tongues. So if that's the case, and these are the aliphates of our Buddha, sometimes it's important, as the C.L. Sharm pointed out, the opening paragraph, sometimes it's important to cause the aliphates. That means the Torah gives us guidance for all generations, for all situations. And we know that to be true. And in different generations, different things become hot button issues. When something becomes a hot button issue, so then even otherwise rational people sometimes have a hard time just like looking at things kafi shayim and figuring out. Let's look at the guidance that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us and let's figure out. Let's look to Gedol Yisrael and with their insight figure out what is it that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants of us in this situation. So sometimes important, certainly the rise of the state of Israel has been a hot button issue for the last century at least. The state was started in 48, but anyone who knows anything about modern Jewish history knows it didn't come from nowhere. There were decades at least of process getting to that point. There's been Baruch Hashem many decades of process since that point. So there's sometimes a lot of confusion about the Torah perspective in the state of Israel. And sometimes you feel like it's a little bit like taboo, like it's sort of in the corner, and we don't really talk about it, and we sort of have like the loose, inchoate, unarticulated positive feelings, negative feelings. So it's important. It's important to clarify things. It's important to figure this out. It's important to figure this out. The Rav famously defined religious Zionism as a recognition that the state of Israel, the Jewish sovereignty, not just Eretz Israel, but Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Israel, is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. which excites some and echoes others. And many of us on either side are not, might not be 100% sure where or why that, that comes from. So what I'd love to do, we began to touch on some of these themes a little bit. Yesterday we just had a couple minutes together. I'd love to explore that a little bit, and also address some of the principal conscious. I'd love to explore, as Rabbi Kopp has made reference to earlier by Davening, the Rabbi, I believe it was, downstairs, in 56. And he gave the drasha called the Yidolfik about Kadosh Baruch Hu. We began to talk about that. Yesterday a little bit, Kadosh Baruch Hu was knocking on our door. You better not miss the knock. To appreciate some of the nevuas that have been realized and continue to be realized, and to address four major kashas on a positive approach to Medina Sichel, hoping to address from Makaros, and then to talk a little bit over about a perspective on practical hanhaga on Yom HaTzvot from a perspective of the Makaros. We'll probably take a break in the middle. We wouldn't want to listen to you for so long. We'll talk a little bit, develop some of the ideas, take a little break, and we'll come back and we'll continue. Then we'll have a chance to, Ramban writes, in Geras Ramban, that there's an incredible value to, after a Jew learns Torah, Kasha Tokum and Asefer, Ramban writes, you get up from the Sefer, you should ask yourself, as you're stepping away from a Seder, what did I just learn? Of what I just learned, what is there that I could put into practice? Maybe we'll have that opportunity at the end of this as well, both within the context of MTA as well as in the context of the Sudas Hada of the greater yeshiva. So I began to talk yesterday a little bit about the Kol Dov Yidolfik, about recognizing the, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes knocking, that incredibly dramatic scene in Shir HaShirim, where after what seems like years, you get the impression of the Raya running after the Doge, and almost catching him, briefly, different episodes, and finally she's lying in bed. Kol Dov Yidolfik, she's lying in bed, and suddenly the Doge, the boy whom she's been yearning for, which Alpi Medrash and Alpi Pshat, according to Malvin as well, is a reference of Alpi Moshel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Dod comes knocking. Kol Dov Yidolfik, and in a moment of weakness and laziness, the Raya stays in bed. And I already changed, my feet are clean, I can't even get dirty, to find some clothing. Narishtet. Dvarim Shel Mavakach. And then, the moment the knocking stops, she realizes what a colossal, cosmic mistake she made. She runs to the door. He's gone, runs through the streets of Yerushalayim, he's nowhere to be found. Rav says, you better not repeat that mistake. You better not miss the knock. To open our eyes, when, in a sense of hodah, in a sense of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, open our eyes and notice HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking care of us, Yeshua. Not only to notice practical Yeshua, but to notice, to open our eyes to see so many nebuahs, some of which we touched on yesterday, so many nebuahs that we take for granted. We take it for granted that the psukim in Chumash and the psukim in Yedim HaKorah, particularly in Yeshayahu, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu bringing back Klal Yisrael from all over the world. I mentioned yesterday, it's been exponential over the last 150 years. From hundreds of Jews to thousands of Jews to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions of Jews, they are what counts as Aretz Mamash. I think there are Jews now living in Eretz Yisrael who come from, or whose grandparents come from, I think, well over 100 countries across the world. But as that's kind of count for the show. Mamash, that's the beginning of this Nevuah taking place. The timing, the chapter points out, the timing brings us to the end of Hazinu. Shiras Hazinu speaks about the justice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kelem Anove Ein Avel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just and fair, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, and there's always Ashkach HaPrachas. One of the major themes at the end of Chumash Dvarim is the theme of Hester Panim, Hester Panai Mehem. We're not going to Kadosh Baruch Hu sometimes hides his face from us. He's still watching. He's made us in a harakin, but we can't see. He's peeking through the cracks. He's still watching us, but he's not mashgiach on achalonos. He's not looking through the window. He's watching us, but we can't see him watching us. And the much of Shiras Azinu is about very, very frightening times of Hester Panim. And Hazinu talks about a terrible Holocaust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to, that within the realm of Hashkachet Hashem is going to befall Klal Yisrael. And it ends with V'chiter Ad Maso Amo. There are several interpretations of Chazal how you translate that phrase. V'chiter Ad Maso Amo. One of which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Mephayis his nation with his land. That after a horrific Holocaust, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will Mephayis us, they're bringing us back to Eretz Yisrael. We take Bin Yerushalayim for granted. We take it for granted that we go to Yerushalayim and Yerushalayim is built up. So we look at Yerushalayim of 150 years ago, it was tiny and scrawny. You look at Yerushalayim of 250 years ago, Jewish Yerushalayim 250 years ago was practically non-existent. In the early 1800s, practically non-existent. There was a very, very, very small Sephardic community in Yerushalayim. In the early 1800s, the Talmidei HaGra, the 610 Talmidei Baal Shem Tov also started to come back to Eretz Yisrael. The Talmidei HaGra in particular came to Yerushalayim, and in 1812, they were miyaseid. Sorry, the Talmidei HaGra talked about the Kol HaTor, which is a kuntres about the Torah HaGra on the process of Geula. They describe how they were miyaseh Beis Medrash Eliyahu in 1812, a Tavkuf Ayin Beis in Yerushalayim, and that was the beginning of the Ashkenazi Yishuv, and that was in many ways the beginning of the growth of Yerushalayim. We lay these psukim that Yerushalayim Kozos Teshev. Yerushalayim will be inhabited outside of its walls. We look at those psukim, whatever. Hello! That means that for centuries and centuries and centuries, Yerushalayim was a teeny tiny, population-wise, impact-wise, in terms of physical impact, it was teeny tiny. To be outside of the walls, whoever heard of such a thing? Yerushalayim was even more endangered before 400 years ago or so, when the Sultan built walls through Yerushalayim. And after that, so they felt somewhat safe inside, but like Uman, to live outside. Now you look at it that we take it for granted. The vast majority of the issue of Yerushalayim, the overwhelming majority, in terms of space, in terms of numbers, is way beyond the what we call the old city, the part that's presently Mukaf Kovach. But that's what the Nevi'im described. Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, we touched on yesterday, or Calvin touched on this morning, the fact that the Navi says there'll come a time when Torah once again emerge from Sion, when Eretz Yisrael in general, Yerushalayim in particular, will be the center of Torah from Klal Yisrael for the world. We take it for granted that the majority of yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael are in and around. So the yeshivas all over the country, the preponderance of yeshivas is certainly in and around Yerushalayim. It was not that way 150 years ago, 250 years ago, or 850 years ago. It probably wasn't, the fact that Rove, I think it's true nowadays, overwhelmingly, that most B'nai Yeshiva are learning in Eretz Yisrael, that was probably not the case since Rabbi Akiva's Yeshiva, since before the Bar Kokhba revolt, to put things into historical perspective. That rove of Limud HaTorah in the world is going on there itself. And there's more. We touched yesterday on the Nebuah Yechezkel. That Eretz Yisrael once again the giver of fruits. I don't think I mentioned yesterday, but I've often thought, you know, if you could imagine if you had an aerial video of Eretz Yisrael yesterday. Imagine an aerial video in a further past. An aerial video of Eretz Yisrael. But the time lapse. You'd see 2,000 years go by in a minute or two. So you would see, you know, the Crusaders came in the almost a millennium ago, and they were shocked when they showed up, and there were no pictures, there were no photos, there was no anything. So all they knew about Eretz Yisrael was they read the Bible. Arizal is Chol Dvash. They expect to come to a paradise. They come to Eretz Yisrael almost 1,000 years ago, and they figure they must have come to the wrong place because it's full of sand dunes. Almost nothing is growing. And then centuries later, Mark Twain, in his travelogue, writes almost identically. He shows up to Eretz Yisrael, expecting the Eretz Yisrael is Chol Dvash. It's one of the most barren places he had seen. Couldn't make heads or tails of it. Of course, we know the shot. That's what Nevi'im told us in advance. Kadosh Baruch Hu told us that the Klal Yisrael is going to go into Galus for a very long time, and the Eretz Yisrael is going to stop giving their fruits. And Kadosh Baruch Hu told us through the Navi Yechezkel over 2,500 years ago that there's going to come a time when her children come back to her, and Eretz Yisrael will once again begin to go green, and the trees, the mountains once again give fruit. Kachaga, over the course of a couple of decades, if you're watching this time lapse, you see that almost for 2,000 years it's all gray and brown and sandy, and then the terrifying over the course of a couple of decades is an explosion of green. Now Kadosh Baruch Hu was ready for that to happen. It happened. I mentioned yesterday that is the nevuah. The Gemara Sayyichas Nanal points to is Ein Lecha Keitz Megula Mizeh, the surest sign that the Geula is nigh, is seeing that the Nevuah be miskayemes. And all the issues came as a case. A Nevuah which we take for granted, a Nevuah which the Kiva was dancing, singing, smiling, just being able to imagine, conjure up that Nevuah, imagine the Kiva could not have seen that Nevuah of all the issues came as a case, as the Gemara describes the end of Makkos, and so many other Nevuahs. And this is just a sample. This is just a scene. So, Aleph, the Jew just has to stop and appreciate. Harei HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that I should live at a singular time in Jewish history when so many Nevuos are being miscounted. For thousands of years, Jews learned Tanakh, and Jews davened for Kibbutz Galus, and Jews davened for Bnei Yerushalayim, and we ought to be Kachom. We ought to feel that even Kachom. If it says that we don't, we got used to it. We got used to it. A Jew can get used to anything. A person can get used to anything. So just to open our eyes and realize that the Nevuah Zaman is Meskaimos before our eyes. At the same time, we mentioned yesterday also, and specifically in terms of sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael, not just HaKadosh Baruch Hu bringing us back, in terms specifically of the return of Jewish sovereignty to Eretz Yisrael, we have Shulton. So we spoke yesterday a little bit about the Beis Yosef and the Magen Avraham, in the context of the Gemara and Mordechai Katan, that Churban in part is defined by a lack of Shulton Yisrael. We spoke about the Gemara and Chagigah that Hayim Beis and the Pnei Geva, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been crying, the Gemara says, since the Churban, for the loss of the pride of the Jewish people and the pride of the Jewish religion, that were a result of the not of the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, but Klal Yisrael being pushed out of Eretz Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael not having rights to Eretz Yisrael. Hashem HaTol Chalkeinu, we don't know exactly what this means, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, so to speak, crying less. But, you might ask a whole series of kashas. You might ask a whole series of kashas. And one shiloh. The shiloh which we deal with at the end is what should I practically be doing on Yom HaTzma? That we'll get to later. Should I say hal? Should I say kinas? Should I say kabbal shabbos? Should I blow shofar? Should I take a haircut? Should I not take a haircut? Should I shave? Should I dance? Should I sing? Should I cry? Well, what ought to be? Some combination thereof, all of the above, none of the above. Well, what's supposed to be? We can figure that later. And certainly matters of halacha, we don't just shoot from the hip. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu, as we began, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a rich Torah. We have a way of figuring out there's lamdas to each of these elements, and we'll figure it out. But first, you have to figure out the thing before you can figure out the nothing. First, let's think from a position of makaros about the agada, the hashkafa, the mashava, before we get to the nafkiminas lahalacha. I would line up four questions that an honest ben Torah might ask, trying to figure out how should I feel about not Eretz Yisrael, but specifically Medina Yisrael, the return of Jewish sovereignty to Eretz Yisrael. So, four questions. Fear kashas. Number one, the Eretz Kasha is, we talk about process of Geula. What does that mean? Process of Geula? That we believe in B'yis HaMashiach. Process of Geula. It is Mashiach, it's not Mashiach. It's not Geula. It's healthy Geula. What does it mean? What is this? This is not B'yis HaMashiach. Mashiach means, Rambam is very clear, Amel Mabas Radam, descendant of David HaMelech, as all the Nabiim highlight, Yishayore highlights at the beginning of the Sefer. Amel Mabas Radam, was Netzer David HaMelech, who's the king over the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, who rebuilds the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have that yet. This is not B'yis HaMashiach. What are you getting excited? Why are you excited? The Jews are safe, Meila. They're excited about the government, Hayitachin. This is a poor substitute for Melech HaMashiach. Kasha number one. Kasha number two, isn't there a Gemara in Tzubis, the Kuf Yud Aleph, that said that the Satmarav highlighted, that says that it's usur for Jews to have an organized aliyah and push their way in and establish themselves as a sovereign power in Eretz Yisrael before B'yis HaMashiach. It's against the Beferish Gemara. The Gimel Shvus. We want to talk about the Shal Shvus. All right, this is in violation of Shal Shvus. As a matter of fact, the Megillah Esther is one of the Perushim in the Bam, the Sefer Mitzvahs. So when the Ramban in the Mitzvahs of Shachach HaRach, those are the Mitzvahs the Ramban didn't count, they should have. So before I mentioned, we opened with Mitzvah Hey, we opened with Mitzvah Yudalit Hazvav, the Mitzvah of Birkas HaTorah. But earlier, I believe it's Mitzvah Hey, is where the Ramban counts the Mitzvah Yishev Eretz Yisrael. So the Megillas Esther says, the Ramban didn't count it because it's Shalosh Shavuos. Can't go back. What do you mean? How is this a positive thing? You should celebrate the fact that Kol Yisrael has been violating, so many Jews have been violating the Gimel Shavuos for 75 years. Rachman al Tzal. Yeah. Good. We'll come to you with some soon. First of all, lay out the kashas.
How does that
get Miguel's message? Correct. Let's lay out the kashas, and then we'll dig it. Again, kasha number one. This is not Mashiach. And that is more or less the point. The kasha number one is more or less the point that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman and Aaron Cutler made at the Knesia Gedola of the Aguda in Marienbad in 1938. They got up and said, how could we be a part of this Hakamas HaMedina? This Hakamas HaMedina, the Aguda Convention was discussing 10 years before it actually happened. They said, how are you talking? It's Kfir Ben Munus HaMashiach. So that's Kasha number one. Kasha number two is the Gimel Shavuos, the Satmar Rebbe's Kasha. Kasha number three, many ways, is how could you look at this historical phenomenon? In the late 1800s, the slow process towards building a state, there certainly were religious Jews, and even a number of Talmid Chachamim who were involved, but the preponderance of the Zionist movement was non-religious or even anti-religious. Many of them, tragically, were kofrim. Many of them were denied Ikar Yemuna. Many of them even saw this as a way to supplant Torah, which is to build the new Judaism instead of being built around Torah mitzvahs and being built around Masor, being built around Kadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to build a new Judaism, a new Jewish identity that will be built around state and nationhood. Kasha number three is Hayitachin, that we should celebrate a process that was driven largely by Jews who were non-religious, even violently in some cases anti-religious. And Hayitachin, you could call this something positive. Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't bring Geula through Minim and Apikursa. That's Kasha number three. Kasha number four is what I mean. The Gedalim didn't hold this. So how can you applaud something that Gedolei Yisrael opposed? Those are, in brief, four major kashas. This is not Mashiach. What about the Gimel Shavuos, Gemara and the Ksubas? How could you celebrate something that was driven largely by Apikursim? How could this be something that a Kadosh Baruch Hu deems positive? And how could you celebrate something that Gedolei Yisrael were opposed to? Those are, I think, more or less capture the four major kashas that a thinking Ben Torah might ask. Yeah. So one by one. So let's address the good kashas. Good kashas. We should be open to asking good kashas. I've said many times during this year that one of the first things you notice when you learn Gemara is that we're into asking good kashas and trying to figure out answers. And one of the things you learn as an aspiring lamdan, they've begun to be trained in the last couple of years, is hanacha analysis. When you have a kasha, you have to be, whether you're analyzing a shaka vataria in a gemara, you should know whether you're dealing with a fresh kasha. You try to figure out what are the hanachas of the kasha, and are the hanachas correct or incorrect? And are they self-evident, or are they mutav machlokas? Or are they basics? So the way we set up the first kasha was, well, this is not Mashiach. This is not Mashiach. This is not Mashiach. That is absolutely true. This is not Mashiach ben David. We believe in Munish Lema, Iker number 12, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring Mashiach ben David, that Olam has, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see to it, that Olam HaZeh reaches its perfected state. That's part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. That Pesukim and Chumash talk about somewhat, that Pesukim and Nevi'im talk about extensively. Yeshayahu and Treyasar and elsewhere. Absolutely. This is not Mashiach ben David. That's true. However, the Hanukkah of the Kasha is that it's binary. It's all or nothing. There's Galus, flat, and then there's B'yos HaMashiach. And there's nothing in between. As we began to touch on yesterday a little bit, when you actually look at the Makoros, in Psukim, in Gemaras, and in Rishonim, and in Achronim, that is not usually assumed to necessarily be the case, that Geulas Mashiach is a din redim. We'll line up a number of Ma'am Makomos. We'll start with the one that I think we've discussed in the past, and then we'll pivot from there. But it's let's start from the opening of Yerushalmi. Talmud Yerushalmi, in I think it's Perak Aleph Halacha Aleph. Yerushalmi referred to Mishnayos as Halachos. The Rambam uses that nomenclature as well. Perak Aleph Halacha Aleph is Brachos. I believe it's Yerushalmi and Yuma also. Yerushalmi describes a conversation between Amoraim. They're walking an early morning walk. It's beginning to get light. If you're out very early in the morning, Alos HaShachar is Alpi Pashtus, the dawn is the point at which it just begins to get light. For those who are not up so early, not so often up before sunrise, but are up hopefully after sunset, so you've noticed the same process symmetrically in the reverse, and when the sun sets, it doesn't immediately go dark. Once the sun sets, as the sun dips deeper and deeper below the horizon, there's still refraction of the sunlight into the atmosphere. Of course, the Be'er HaShemashes, it gradually gets dark until finally the sun is deep enough below the horizon, probably around 11, 12 degrees or so. At that point, you no longer see any light in the sky. So the same is true in the morning. that Alos HaShachar is just a drop of light. It begins, it's almost imperceptible at first. And then it begins to get slightly lighter and slightly lighter and slightly lighter until finally, as sunrise draws closer, the rate at which the sky is getting bright accelerates. So that's what these Amoraim say, Kachi Gulasan Shal Yisrael. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in mind for the Gula of Kal Yisrael. The Kila Kima Kima. First, a little bit, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. At first, it's even going to be imperceptible. And slowly, it's going to pick up speed, and slowly, 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 until finally, Al Derech Mashal, the sun rises. But there'll be plenty of steps, plenty of process before the sun rises. And that's what the Bavli talks about. This Bavli we've discussed, I think, in the past, but it's perhaps Talmud Chazara. The Gemara in the bottom of Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin, and Beit Magen touched on this drop yesterday. The Gemara has a steer and psuk in both terms of when Gula will come and how the Gula will come. And if you've heard discussion in growing up about the Kates, it's probably based on this Gemara. Gemara has a stira in between Zechariah and Daniel, will be a Mashiach be totally miraculous or a slow natural process. Adi Baruch HaMar, a stira from word to word in Yeshayahu, whether Mashiach will come on time or ahead of schedule. Non-Yekid might not appreciate the difference. What do you mean? But if any good Yekid knows, ahead of schedule is not on time. On time is there's a time and it happens then. If Meir is called for 9:05, then you don't start 9:06, you also don't start 9:04. You start at 9:05. So I think it's Alexandri maybe. He must have been Yekid. He asked this kasha, I understand. It's a phrase in Yeshayahu. It happens to be the last two words of one of the Shev de Nechemta, one of the Nevuas of Nechama, all drawn from the end of Sefer Yeshaya that track us from after Tisha B'Av up until Rosh Hashanah. V'ita Achishena. What do you mean? V'ita Achishena. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Yerush Gula on time. The Mother time. If I'm a mere mortal and I'm running late, so I might have to rush in order to be on time. I left the house late, so if I go at my normal pace, I'm not going to get to shul on time. So I rush, I'm meichesh, so that could be on time. What does it mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meichesh to be on time? So there could have been different ways of interpreting it. The Gemara understands that it's either or. Zoch or lo zoch, depends. We're zocha to geula. The geula will come in with total nisim and will come achishena in advance. In other words, l'chomra, if we're zoch, if the Klal Yisrael does what we need to do to be zocha to geula, Kadosh Baruch Hu will bring geula as soon as we deserve it. Malvin discussed things that based on that Gemara a couple of blood earlier in Sanhedrin, Sanhedalad, but the earliest time Mashiach could have come was Chizkiyahu. And ever since then, it's been open. There's the Yerushalmi that makes it sound like, according to most Tanaim, the potential of Bias Mashiach only started in the year 4000, the year 240 on the Christian calendar. More than 150 years after the Churban by Sheni, based on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, about the last 2,000 years, from 4,000 to 6,000, are Yemos of Mashiach. Whatever it is, for a very long time, there's been potential Mashiach to come. If we deserve it, he comes. Akishana. And with Ptolemies. If we don't deserve it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring Mashiach despite us, but that's going to be Be'ita. There's a final time by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants Mashiach to come. That's the notion of the Kates. Mashiach not come after a certain set time. And if Mashiach comes despite us instead of because of us, if lo zachinu, so then it'll be Ani Baruch Hu Kamar. Then it'll be a gradual process. And that the notion that shot in the Gemara, who's to say that Ani Baruch Hu Kamar means a gradual process? So the Arachayim writes that in Parshas Balak. Erenu v'lo atash, erenu v'lo karov. When after Bilam gives a series of attempts, the curse Klal Yisrael repeatedly gives breath at the Klal Yisrael. So King Balak says, you're fired. And Bilam says, you can't fire me, I quit. And before I quit, I have something else to tell you. Let me tell you about Achrasiyah. Let me tell you about B'yasa Mashiach. And he opens by saying, I see it, It's not here. I see in the distance, it's not close. Already a stira. Is it just not right now, or is it not even close? And then another stira, Darach Kol from Yaakov becomes Shevet Yisrael. He describes Mias Mashiach as a rising star and as a staff. Mapesh Adar. So Chaim says, that's his Gemara in Sanhedrin. It might be soon, it might not be soon. And what's, so that's Eren of Elata, Shoyer of Okar, the question of when. The question of how, he says, Beferish. Dar Kol from Yaakov means total Nisim. Kom Shevet Yisrael means Shevet is a symbol of political process. There's that shot in Anivarach Lachamar. These past Shabbos, Rabbi Mendel, one of the senior members of the Beferish, pointed me to an unbelievable Nitziv who quotes a fantastic Ramban. The pasuk in Nitzavim Paraglam and Pasuk Gimel, the beginning of the Revi'i. The Shav Hashem Elokecha Shavusecha, Yerichamecha, Kadosh Baruch Hu bring us back, and that Rachmanus, the Shav, the Kibes from Mikol Ha'am, Mesher Hafitz Hashem Elokecha Shavu. Kadosh Baruch Hu will go back and be mekabetz us from all the nations to where he has spread us. So what's with the double lashon? V'shav Hashem lokach shlusa, v'shav v'kibetza. So the Tziv writes in the Hamid Gavar, Perek Lamed Pasimimo, Acher sheyashav ikar, he says there'll be two stages of Shiva Sion. There are two stages of HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring us back to Eretz Yisrael. Acher sheyashav ikar hagola min hagoyim, after the bulk will come back of our own accord, yashuv Hashem lekabetz min ha'am esher titz Hashem shama ma'at ma'at. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do a second round to bring us all in and listen to the Ramban that he quotes in the Pirush on Shir HaShirim. Ha'elof l'cha shlomo. Mitchila yiyya kibbutz, tzas kibbutz galios, adek rishyon ha'malchiyos. First is going to be a partial kibbutz galios by dint of the permission of the nation. Yachakav yosef Hashem yadol shames. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do a second round of kibbutz galios. Ramban wrote this a good 800 years ago, long before anyone was dreaming. Which malchios would it even have been? Which Malchus would even have been. And the truth is, in wrapping up our thinking about the first Kasha, this is not Mashiach, and the notion that there are many indications, and there's a possibility that the Geulas Yisrael, the Bias HaMashiach, will be a process that will end. It will end with the final destination is absolutely Mashiach ben David, and Mel Chabas Radam makes their David, that David is Shlomo, who's king over the Jews and rebuilt the Beis Hamikdash, where the Rambam describes the closing prakim of Mishnah Torah. And now you have this Yerushalmi, the Brachos and Yuma, you have the Bavli in Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin, as expanded on by the Arachayim and Boak. You have this Ramban and Shir, at the end of Shir HaShirim, quoted by the Nitziv, the Nitzavim, Paraglamet, Pasuk Gimel. The truth is that in the Torah of the Gra on Geula, know what they question? The Torah of the Gra on Geula, there's a sefer from one of the Talmidei HaGra that is supposed to be a Torah Sagra. We have very little. Most of what we have that we refer to as Torah Sagra is Talmidei. There's often a question what's from the Gra, what's not. There are many who believe that this is authentic Torah Sagra. He writes at length, some of it is Al-Derech Nigla, some of it is Al-Derech Nister. This is the Al-Derech Nister is beyond me. But he writes at length that that's the concept that what Sanhedrin has of Mashiach ben Yosef. Is the preliminary stages of the process that will be a sarusa dilatata, that the human beings will do, the Jews will do, in advance of the coming of Mashiach ben David. That he talks about one of the major themes in Kol HaTorah, is that likely there will be process There'll be steps in advance of the actual Bias Mashiach Mandavi. And by the way, it's in the Kol HaAtar I mentioned before, that he describes the founding of Beis Medrash Aliyahu, and I believe he says that they laid the foundation stone. I mentioned what year? 1812. What date? It was the 20th of the Omer. It was Heyer. It was, I believe he refers to it as Yesod Shevet Tiferes. Again, I'm not Madrid. I know that's the sphere that corresponds to the 20th of the Omer, because I can do the arithmetic. I don't know what that means, but he does, at some length, explain in terminology that I am not zocher to understand. But they saw that as a significant day in terms of steps in process towards Bias HaMashiach. So that was 211 years ago. 211 years ago. Yeah. But there are many indications that there may be a process, and I would just close this with a mushal. Mushal Amad Dover Gomer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, and then we're at Har Sinai for almost a year minus 10 days. We arrived, according to Chazal's chronology, on Rish Chodesh Sivan at Har Sinai, the camp at Har Sinai, and a year minus 10 days later, the 20th of Iyar, Nosim Anachnu, the Parshas Baalosa. That's when the Jews move out. The Rabbi's beautiful drasha. Baalosa talks about a triumphant march, the beginning of Bamidbar, sort of building. They're preparing to move, and the Degalim and the Chatzotzros, and they're all ready to start marching from Har Sinai. And Moshe even says to Yisro, Nosim Anachnu, we're going there, so come with us. And then, things didn't work out. Or did they? Kadosh Baruch Hu, it seems like, it planned to take us the express route to Eretz Yisrael. And we did ultimately get to Eretz Yisrael. But what would have been a very rapid and painless route instead became a torturously long and painful and challenging 4 decades in the Midbar. But we ultimately got to the same destination. But there was a plan A and plan B for how to get to that destination. The destination was the same. Kalali Yisrael moved into Eretz Yisrael. But would it be short and painless, or would it be long and torturous journey to get there? That was Tali in our Bechira. That was a response to our Hatan. So at least Derech Mashal, it could even be in terms of the original plan with Yom HaShishi, Yom HaShvi, whether the original Yom HaShvi would have been Olam HaBa or not, maybe another mushal as well, a little more esoteric. But it may be a recurring pattern. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a final destination of Geula for us to get to, and he's going to bring us there whether we are on board or not. But if we're on board, so then it'll be more rapid, and the timing will be more rapid, and the manner will be pleasant and miraculous. And if he's bringing us despite our bad decisions, then the time will be longer, and the manner will be certainly less miraculous and full of many more challenges. But the ultimate destination then was Klal Yisrael coming to Eretz Yisrael. The ultimate destination now is Mashiach ben David. How do we get there is a question. So those are some of the makoros that speak to that first question of isn't this. This is not Mashiach ben David. Absolutely, it's not Mashiach ben David. It is, however, it does, however, look an awful lot like the wheels of Gula are turning and we are in the process. Yeah, question.
Sometimes when you learn after you bring something to subconscious, you have to understand how to do it. So, what was the kasha of the Quran Prophet?
That's a great question. What's Pshat Rav Yochanan and Ram Kotler? So let's hold up a little bit, because I want to address that when we get to Kasha number 4. It's a very good point, and I want to address that when we get to Kasha number 4. Other questions?
Have you mentioned before that someone explained that the reason why the Rambam didn't apply that you should write stories in this way is because of the first quote.
Yeah.
But isn't there another explanation that says that the Rambam didn't codify it because he had other mitzvot that were related, that were Talmud Ha'aretz, so therefore you had to have Yishmael.
Fantastic. Thank you, Natan, for segueing us into kasha number two. Yeah, kasha number two was the Gemara Shavuos. The Gemara says in Maseches Ksuvos, the Gemara has the sugya of Chibas Eretz Yisrael. And at the end of Maseches Ksuvos, it comes up because of a technical issue in Maseches Ksuvos. Maseches Ksuvos deals in large part with the halachic mechanics of the reciprocal obligations between husband and wife. As an aside, in a healthy situation, all this is irrelevant. In a healthy, happy marriage, so we work on our own. We don't need halachic structure to make sure that we're taking care of each other. We're doing it, out of a sense of ava. But in a normal, healthy situation, all this nitzal mechila, and a happy, happily married couple can ignore all these rules and figure out on their own. But the rules are there to protect people when things are not ideal. So at the end, at the very end of the Masechta, the Mishnah raises the question of, let's say, husband and wife can't come to an agreement on whether or not they should make Aliyah. Or they can't come to an agreement on whether or not they should move from Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim. But the Mishnah suggests that if they can't agree, again, that's obviously a very, very suboptimal. We would encourage them to hammer it out together, like any other significant decision. Figure it out together, listen to each other, understand, seek to understand one another, and then seek to make yourself understood. But strictly speaking, technically speaking, let's say they don't agree. So if they're going to appeal to a Beis Din, so by rights, the Mishnah seem to indicate that the one who wants to move to Eretz Yisrael has, so to speak, right of way. The one who wants to be arrayed does not have right of way. So that technical point sets into motion a fantastic series of agadotas about Kibbutz Aretz. So the Gemara describes the Amoraim. Well, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, they were traveling to Eretz Yisrael, and it sounds like they were on foot, on a donkey, I forget, and they came to the border of Eretz Yisrael, they got down and mamash like rolled in the soil. Based on the pasuk, Yiratzu avadecha zavaneh v'safara yichonam. And mamash, the chibas Aretz was even to the extent that they were so excited, mamash, to make contact, physical contact with the sticks and stones, the stones and the soil of Eretz Yisrael. And in that context, the Gemara, I believe, is the top of Kufi Alpha and Alpha, the second Suvas, the Gemara references the Psukim in Shir HaShirim, and talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hishvati Esrem Ben Uzer Shalayim, a whole series of Shavuos. So what are those Shavuos? So the Gemara says, no, it's different interpretation. The Gemara says there were various shavuos that Kadosh Baruch Hu imposed on Klal Yisrael, that Kadosh Baruch Hu imposed perhaps as well on Umas Olam. And one of the shavuos that Kadosh Baruch Hu imposed on Klal Yisrael is Sholyalu Bechoma. They should not go back as a wall. Shouldn't use borrowing terminology that also appears in Shir HaShirim. You shouldn't go back forcefully. Sounds like against the will of the Umas Olam. It's a pressure to get for Rashi, some of the other Rishonim there. Okay? And as I mentioned before, the Gil Zester quotes this Gemara to explain why it is that the Rambam does not count Yishar Exzal the Mitzvah. Because we shouldn't be going back there to solve his Mazim. Shoyal Bechom. So not only is it certainly true that as Natan pointed out, that Teretz is Alpi Pashtos, based on the way we usually deal with the Rambam's Minyan Mitzvahs, both unnecessary and insufficient, Because the fact that something isn't practically noig b'zman hazeh because of a temporary consideration does not make it, does not warrant not counting as a mitzvah. The other days of mikdash, there are many karbonos we cannot bring, and we don't have a parah aduma, and yet the Rambam counts all the mitzvahs, even mitzvahs that are not noig at a certain period, of time. So it's hard to understand how that teretz works. It's hard to understand how it's a sufficient teretz. It's also probably not a necessary teretz, because there are many other approaches to understand whether Ram did not count Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Most likely he understands those psukim to either be a havtacha or else a heksher mitzvah, something that we've dealt with in other contexts earlier. Much as Ramban doesn't count making the clay mikdash, because he sees them not as mitzvahs b'fnei atzma, but as hechsherim, or the avodos that are respectively done, the hadlak, you need a menorah for the hadlak, you need a shofar for the lechapanim. Ram would not understand that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not in and of itself a mitzvah, but it's a hechsher for countless other mitzvahs. Moreover, many times Yecham pointed out that other than this one line with Gilas Esther, the Satmar Rebbe, in a very cleverly titled Sefer Ala Geula Ala Tamura, when he developed at length that he believed that that Hakamas HaMedina was Maisa Satan, that's a horrific thing, Chalila, you know, giving strength to Hakamas HaMedina is going to push off, is going to delay Bias HaMashiach. One of the issues that he raises is the Shal Shavuos. Megillas Esther, the Halakha Megillas Esther writes that that the Rambam held that Shal Shavuos are binding, it's usher to be all of the Chol. So to continue problem number one or response number one, I should say, to the Kasher Shal Shavuos, not only is it far from clear that the Megillas Esther's Teretz is only Teretz, in fact, it's not. You look in the Sifrei HaPoskim, no one quotes the Shal Shavuos, including the Rambam, who codified everything, including things that are not knowing was not there, and things that are knowing was not there. Never does he quote anywhere. The Rambam, the Rosh, the Rif, the Tur, the Shulchan Aruch, all the classic Sifrei HaPoskim, no one quotes this Agadatha of the Shal Shavuos. The overwhelming impression you get from the unanimous shtika of the poskim is that they did not see this agadata as binding the halacha. Whether they understood it to be a mashal for some idea, depending on what the idea is, as is the case with many other agados, or they held that we don't pass them this way, but it doesn't make it to the Sefer HaPoskim. So that's one response to the question of Shal Shavuos. It's al pi pashtus, it's not the halacha. The Megillas Esther quotes the pshat in the Rambam, but look in the Rambam, Mishnah Torah, it never does it appear. Moreover, there was a ha'ara that was made both by the Arsa Meach, the Meach Simcha and Vince, as well as the Shein Yishmuel, the second Sefer Chavar Rebbe, the son of the Adonazer, the grandson of the Kotzio, as well as many others. I think those are the two most famous. The point is the following. Just to trace the history a little bit. Eretz Yisrael, after being conquered by the Romans, Eretz Yisrael was already under the sovereignty of the Romans, mentioned yesterday, even before the Churban Bayis Sheni, much as Eretz Yisrael was under the sovereignty of the Babylon, even before the Churban Bayis Rishon. They continued to be under the sovereignty of the Romans for centuries afterwards. And then it got kicked around. One empire conquered, another empire conquered. The Ottomans, the Turks, who for late Middle Ages, early modern era, had for a couple hundred years had an empire that stretched across a significant part of Asia and Europe. The Ottoman Empire grew and shrank, as did most empires of the first time. The Ottomans controlled Eretz Yisrael for centuries, up until World War I. up until the 1910s. The Turks were on the losing side of World War I. They were allied with the Germans, and they lost. And as a result, the Allies who won, the British and the French, divided up much of Ottoman Middle East. There was the Sykes-Picot line. For those who have studied their early 20th century history, the Sykes-Picot line. Sykes was a Brit, and Picot was a P-I-C-O-T, was a Frenchman. And the way it's described, they took a map, and someone took a blue pencil and drew a line, and that's where the French have to the north, and the British have to the south. Eretz Yisrael was to the south of the Sykes-Picot line. Eretz Yisrael became part of the territory that the British were in control of. And through a variety of a series of nisim nistarim, which include the fact that there was a young Jewish chemist named Chaim Weizmann, who was friendly with if I remember correctly, with a English statesman by the name of Balfour, Sir Balfour, who had been in and out of power. And his fellow, Chaim Weizmann, his chemical investigations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it, that his chemical research uncovered ideas that were helpful over the course of the war, over the course of World War I. He was in a, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put him in a position of influence. When Balfour became once again part of the ruling party in the UK, and they tell the stories about the conversations that they had. Chaim Weizmann had guts. The lines that he had in that conversation, one of the most famous conversations. Balfour said, we have London, we have Paris, we have these incredible metropolises, where Yerushalayim is a little nothing. And he says, I forget the verbatim line, but something like when your ancestors running around in loincloth, they're digging the soil around London with stones. My ancestor David HaMelech was the king of Yerushalayim composing till. Take it easy, a little bit of a perspective. The British decide. First, on their own, that the Balfour Declaration, Her Majesty, I forget the exact language, Her Majesty looks with favor, His Majesty looks with favor on the notion of reestablishing a Jewish homeland, Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. Then, not only did the British government proclaim that, but I believe it was in 1920, at the conference of the League of Nations at San Remo, the League of Nations voted and accepted that idea, that there should be an establishment of a Jewish homeland, a Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. Just to appreciate that a little bit. Or Sameach wrote at the time, so Misan Remo, once they had the convention at San Remo, Sar Pachad HaShavuos, the fright of the Gimel Shavuos is gone, because now the Umos HaOlam gave us that permission. Much as the Ramban wrote in the Pirushan Shir HaShirim, that we're going to come through Rishon HaMalchios. And that's what the Shem Yishmuel said as well. After San Remo, even if the language Pachad HaShavuos, I'm not sure how to be medayik in it, but it sounds perhaps he wasn't, he was hedging his bets. The Kibbutz Arsenev saying he's not sure that it was ever relevant, but even if it was relevant, if you're scared of it, there's no reason to be scared of the Shavuos anymore, because it's no longer Kachol. We have the Rishon of Umos HaOlam. I just wanted to appreciate for a moment the following. For hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, when Jews learned that Gemara and Sukkos, how would you have imagined the nations of the world giving you permission to do X? What does that even mean? before the establishment of the League of Nations, there was no vehicle for that. What do you mean the nations of the world said? What does that mean? They're different nations. Each one does its thing. What do you mean? There was no organized body of the nations of the world. How would the Ummah to Olam express anything? For hundreds of years, how would you even visualize the nations of the world saying something? And Kadosh Baruch Hu saw to it when he felt the time was right. And if you remember your early 20th century European history, or American history, those who are getting ready for a push, so you'll remember that Woodrow Wilson was gung-ho on this notion of the League of Nations, and he thought that the League of Nations was a way, after the Great War, World War I, at that time it wasn't World War I, it was the World War, which was horrific, beyond horrific. Woodrow Wilson, the academic, felt that the way to achieve world peace and to make sure that nothing like this ever happens again, we're going to create a league of all the nations, we'll get together, and we'll discuss things, and that way there won't be wars anymore. That was Woodrow Wilson's dream. The British and the French probably didn't have much faith in that dream, but being that Woodrow Wilson was so gung-ho on it, they were able to extract from him what they wanted, which was to punish Germany terrifically and to squeeze Germany in ways that pushed it into economic collapse and probably hastened the coming of World War II, politically speaking. But moreover, if you study the history of the League of Nations, I encourage you to do that. Spend a few minutes today exploring what the League of Nations accomplished. Nothing of substance other than two things. One horrific thing is it could be that the League of Nations led to World War II, ironically. Certainly, what the League of Nations allowed the British and the French to get away with, it may even be that there was a false sense of security. Certainly, it did not prevent a numerous military outbreaks during its 3 decades or so of existence up until World War II. It certainly did not prevent World War II. The one positive thing that the League of Nations accomplished is that it gave an opportunity for the Ummah Olam to get together and vote on and ratify the notion that Klal Yisrael should return to sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. And once you notice that, it's hard to unsee that. It's hard to not notice that the Kadosh Baruch Hu created this phenomenon that never existed before, certainly for centuries. It seems like for the sole purpose of Kadosh Baruch Hu was ready to take away the concern of Choma. Kadosh Baruch Hu was ready, as Ramban writes, to give Rishon HaMalchios for Klal Yisrael to come back, not only to return to Eretz Yisrael, but to return to sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. That's exactly what the Arsa Meach and the Shem Yishmur others said. Sar Pachal Shavuos. Even if you think the Shalosh Shavuos were binding, like the Megillas Esther or not, despite the fact that the posts don't quote it, even if it was binding, Alpi Pashas, it stopped being binding if not at the time of the Balfour Declaration, shortly afterwards at San Remo, the League of Nations accomplished what looks like the one thing that it was created to accomplish, which is to remove the pachad of the Shavuos. So that's kasha number two. Kasha number one was, this isn't Bias HaMashiach. It's not Mashiach with David. And the answer is certainly not. As you said, there are countless indications, Chazal and Rishonim, that Geula will be a process, or at least might be a process. Kasha number two, the Shalosh Shavuos. So number one, it's probably not binding Lahalacha. And even if it was, Alpi Pasha says the Arsa Meach, the Meshach Chachma, the Shem Yishmor pointed out, no longer binding. Kasha number three. I promised you a break. Let's take a little break.